Good afternoon, and welcome to Reminiscing, a program of nostalgia and recollections of the good old days, times that we remember as happy and maybe a little simpler. We know we can't go back, but we certainly can reminisce. This is your volunteer reader, Mary Ellen Stepanek, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, your 24-hour reading station. Hello, and welcome. It was kind of chilly this morning, wasn't it? Here's an item that is all about how to take care of those cool days. It's entitled Furs for the Family. Their dad did what it took to take care of his family all winter. This was sent in by Helen Adkins. I was number 12 of 12 children. By the time I was born, on July 25th, 1933, there were still six kids at home. Times were hard in the 1930s. Dad was a bricklayer, and as there was no work for him in the winter, he would do odd jobs, plus he hunted and trapped fox, mink, groundhog, muskrat, and other animals for their fur, and in some cases for their meat. Dad could hunt and shoot animals and set traps. He checked his traps twice a day, no matter the weather. If he caught any animals, he brought them home, skinned them, and then stretched the skins on a frame to dry right away. It was a job that could not wait until later. Dad was so good that he could skin an animal and never nick the hide. Granddad, Andy Thomas, started to teach Dad to do all these arts when he was 8 years old. When Dad hung the furs on our house, word spread fast, and our neighbors would come to see what he had caught. After Thanksgiving, Dad would remove the pelts from the frame and turn the fur inside out. We would go to the farriers and sell them so there was money for Christmas and other needs. At Thanksgiving and Christmas time, men in our community held shooting contests to win a turkey and ham. Participants bought tickets for so much money per bullet and were limited as to how many bullets they could buy. Dad and my three brothers, Walter, Howard, and Everett, were excellent marksmen. One time they walked in and a man said, "Here are the Thomases. Give them their ham and turkey and let them leave." For less than $5, they each won a turkey and a ham. When they got their meat, they wouldn't try for more. They didn't think it was fair to the other men. Mom would add her canned food to our holiday meals, so we had quite a feast. Every fall, we would go to Weldy's Orchard and buy 4 bushels of apples to eat and to can to add to our stockpile of canned food. When Everett was in Belgium during World War II, he asked Mom to send him some squirrel meat. She fried it, put it in 2 glass quart jars, and poured in boiling grease to cover the meat. It arrived in perfect condition. This was Furs for the Family by Helen Adkins. Now here's from a section called Good Old Days Poetry, and it's a poem entitled Winter on the Farm by Freeman Edmund Miller. Glad winters on the olden farm, how raptures from those early times commingle into fairy chimes which gently banish cries of harm. My fainting soul finds rest the whiles within the arms of memory, and tender scenes of boyish glee transform my sorrows into smiles. How brightly beamed the pleasures then, when frigid fingers came to throw a wintry winding sheet of snow around the silent homes of men. But happiness found no alarm, for safe with cheer, secure with love, she gladly grew and sweetly throve through winters on the olden farm. With merry bells and busy sleighs that hung and flew o'er icy vales, and climbed the hills as fleet as gales, like singing phantoms died the days. or then, with coat and muffler warm, sweet children glided on the lake or chased the rabbit through the brake in winters on the olden farm. How glad the joys at eventide, when round the hearthstone's pleasant heat, the simple song and music sweet from loving voices floated wide. The mellowed apples gave a charm, while popcorn white and cider bright with worlds of laughter lent delight to winters on the olden farm. Thrice happy nights and happy days, sweet isles of pleasure in the past, may long your hallowed moments cast a sacred sunshine o'er my ways. And where life leads me, gladly arm my soul with angel songs of bliss, with true embrace and holy kiss. Oh, winters on the olden farm. And this was Winters on the Farm by Freeman Edwin Miller. And from the Good Old Days in the Kitchen section is this item entitled Keeping Warm on Cold Days. After a day of playing outside, these hearty dishes warm them from their fingers to their toes. This was written by Susan Wagner. When I was younger, Sundays were always the day my dad cooked. Mom made the quick weekday meals, but Dad always made the simmering pots of soup or meaty crocks of chili or bubbling cheesy casseroles, the mainstays of our Sunday family dinners. His preparations would start after church. Dad might cut up a chicken, toss it and a few vegetables into a large pot of water, and let it simmer away to make stock for homemade chicken and dumplings or a tasty chicken noodle soup. Sometimes he would set a large pot of tomato sauce and basil on the back burner and let it cook for hours. It was delicious on an oversized bowl of homemade pasta. The enticing smell would fill the house all afternoon. Back in those days, we kids would leave the house early and be gone all day. We would roam all over the neighborhood, playing with friends and exploring the woods and river nearby. We had a sledding hill between two houses that went down toward the river. My parents had bought an old wooden toboggan, and we would cram as many kids as we could on the sled and propel ourselves down the hill, trying to see how far we could go. Someone in the neighborhood would always shovel an area near the shore for us all to ice skate. One year, my sister and I walked down to the river in our skates with the blade guards on. We skated for hours. When it came time to go home, our feet and ankles were too tired to wear the skates home, and we hadn't brought any shoes. So we took off our mittens, put them on our feet, and then skedaddled home as quickly as we could. Luckily, an enticing beef and noodle stew was ready for dinner, complete with homemade bread. Hearty soups, stews, and casseroles I remember so fondly are perfect cold-weather dishes to warm you after you've been chilled to the bone, not to mention that they make wonderful leftovers. What follows that story are recipes for making beef and homemade noodles, chicken and dumplings, and lentil soup. Yummy. This next story is entitled Winter Wonderland. Everyone on this short street enjoyed the long months of cold and snow. This was sent in by Rosemary O'Grady. Winters in Niagara Falls, New York, where I grew up, can last anywhere from 4 to 6 months and can be especially harsh and grueling, with snowdrifts getting up to 17 feet or more at times. We lived on 54th Street, a short street with only 6 houses. One end of the street led to a giant field in one direction, and all the way from Buffalo Avenue, a main thoroughfare of the city, to the next cross street in the other direction. For the 22 children who lived on our street, there were all kinds of activities to keep us busy. In our family, preparation for the winter season usually began in the fall. While Dad and the boys picked the vegetables from our overflowing garden, Mom and we girls canned the tomatoes and blanched most of the other vegetables for freezing. If there were more vegetables than we could use, as was often the case, they were spread among our relatives. We didn't start school until after Labor Day, so the week before was dedicated to fall cleaning. Mom and we girls cleaned the whole inside of the house from top to bottom, while Dad and the boys, along with a few of our older male Canadian cousins, painted the outside of the house and put up the storm windows. Wood also had to be cut and put in our old coal bin in the cellar. Sometimes we all pitched in to do that. Everyone was kept quite busy, making sure we were well prepared for the winter months ahead. With the first snowfall, my brothers and sisters and I thought of nothing but all the fun things that lay ahead for us. Being that the weather was already cold, our winter coats, hats, gloves, and boots were already sitting at the side entrance steps, ready for us to grab at a moment's notice. After the first snowfall, the whole city looked like a winter wonderland, but none more so than 54th Street. At least, it seemed that way to us. It pretty much stayed that way until the end of February, and sometimes beyond. It didn't matter that it was snowing and 10 degrees. We took full advantage of every spare moment that was available. And we very much appreciated all the activities that were afforded to us during those cold winter months. Traffic was light on our street, so when it snowed, there was plenty of great sledding. As far as I can remember, we were the only family on the street who owned a real sled. Everyone else improvised and used what they could find. No matter what was used, we all had a great time. The industrial section of Niagara Falls was right behind us on 53rd Street. One of the factories let their wastewater flow onto part of the field that was next to the last house on the street. It formed a small pond. It wasn't deep enough to swim in during the summer, and probably most of the parents on the street wouldn't have allowed that anyway. But it formed a nice ice rink during the winter. The boys would make their own hockey sticks and pucks and then play hockey. Usually there were enough boys in the surrounding neighborhood and on our street to make two teams. While the boys played hockey, the girls found some other activity to keep busy while waiting for our turn to skate. Once we had our fill of playing, we all went to our respective homes. In our family, we would take off our wet clothes at the side entrance, careful to hang them up to dry. If we didn't, we would pay the consequences. Mom or Dad would have a fire going full tilt in our fireplace nearly all day in the winter, and we would sit in front of it to take off the chill. Cups of hot cocoa were passed all around, and we were warm and cozy again in no time. If we weren't too tired from playing outside, we played Go Fish, or one of the many other games we had. We also had Niagara Falls itself, which is spectacular to watch any time, but in the winter, it takes on an aura all of its own. The icy Niagara River reaches the falls with the water cascading 167 feet to the bottom. As it hits the bottom, it rises up again in steamy furls, leaving anyone who sees it in total awe. When it snows, a very picturesque and magnificent panorama presents itself to all who view it. With the mighty roar of the falls, the whole setting looks like something one can only dream of. With all the winter activities on and around our short street and in our home, plus having spectacular views of the great Niagara Falls, we truly lived in a winter wonderland. And this was Winter Wonderland by Rosemary O'Grady. This next story is entitled No Germs Allowed. Dr. Mom took care of her family all winter. This was written by Evelyn Rona. No germs allowed. This was the rule of the house. If anyone under our roof dared to come down with some malady, there was an arsenal of remedies ready and waiting to engage the enemy in germ warfare. We all knew that at some point during the winter season, we would be visited by that invisible enemy that infiltrated our line of defense. Nevertheless, Mom saw to it that some preventative measures were put into place. Every day began with a glass of cod liver oil mixed with orange juice. The oil rose to the top, and the orange juice sank to the bottom. There was a trick to drinking this concoction. Close your eyes, hold your nose, and get it down as quickly as possible. The taste of the cod liver oil was erased by the last few swallows of orange juice. Inevitably, the winter season was never free of the dreaded cold germ. Dr. Mom had everything we needed for healing right at her fingertips, and doctors were used only when all else failed. There were a few permanent occupants of the medicine cabinet: Vicks VapoRub, cough syrup, and aspirin to help ease the symptoms. But when things got serious, the big guns came out. Raw garlic sandwiches. Onions could be added if you were brave enough. Of course, we took the old standby, tea with honey, lemon, and a little wine. Credit needs to be given to Mom's imaginative remedies like boiled beer, which needed to be sipped slowly while it was still hot. It's a lucky thing that we were such a hardy bunch and survived one cold season after another. The battles were fought valiantly, but in the end, nature took its course and remained the winner, despite all the efforts that Mother could dream up. Of course, the exceptions to treatment by Mom's remedies were broken bones and serious cuts. But along with her endless pot of chicken soup and dedication to her family, she pretty well had most situations under control. And this was No Germs Allowed by Evelyn Rona. This next story is entitled Skating on Thin Ice. Nothing was going to keep these brothers on dry ground. This was sent in by Douglas Clark. In the winter of 1954, I was 12 years old, and my brother, Buddy Earl, was 11. There wasn't an ice skating rink in the Smoky Mountains of East Tennessee, but we did have a humongous cow pond. In a hard winter, the pond froze solid. But that winter was mild. And in a mild winter, you took your chances on the ice splintering apart. We were not permitted to swim in the cow pond during summer, but come winter, it was a perfect place to play on the ice. Having only winter boots as skates, my brother and I were forced to improvise. Moving across ice wearing boots was not the safest thing to do. With any humps or cracks in the ice, we fell and traveled across the pond spread eagle. I'm tired of spending most of my time scooting across the ice face down. We have to think of something to put on our boots. Just don't say lard again. We tried that, said Buddy Earl. It was true. We had tried lard, axle grease, and even motor oil. Nothing helped. Boots were made for walking on ice, not skating. Buddy Earl was the thinker, and I was the doer. More often than not, when we put our heads together, it was a disaster. Buddy Earl crossed his arms and smiled. That's when I knew our train was about to jump the tracks. I got it. You can make skates to fit on our boots from pieces of wood. How in the world did you come up with that idea? I asked. All I can build are birdhouses. When my younger brother smiled again, I knew we were done for. Hans Brinker, in the story Silver Skates, had handmade wooden skates, and he won the race. You just hit the nail on the head, I replied. It's only a story someone made up. Besides, how would we fix the wood to our boots? Buddy Earl pointed at my boots. Glue or small nails. Glue would work, but nails would be faster and hold better. Just what kind of glue is going to hold wood to rubber? I asked. Buddy Earl gave me his know-it-all grin. The white glue we use in school. Don't you remember? The kind that some kids eat. Now I had a way out of this. That white glue is for paper and nothing else. It just wouldn't work. My brother was not going to give up. Then it's nails. There's a can full of small nails in the barn. They're just what the doctor ordered. Knowing there wasn't a way out, I caved in. Okay, I'll go along with this, only if I do the wood finding and the nailing. The wood and nails were easy to find. Nailing the wood to the boots was a little tricky. When I finished, I handed my brother his boots. Hold on a minute. This ain't going to work. You have to bend the nails over. They are just spikes. Now our train derailed and went over a cliff. If I bend the nails over, we might tear up the soles, removing the wood. Buddy Earl handed me his boots. You are just a worrywart. If you nailed something on, you can nail it off. Dad did have a claw hammer and a pair of pliers. Removing the wood would be a breeze, so I thought. The ice sure looks thin. Maybe we should wait for a cold spell, I said. There you go again, raining on our parade. I'll go first if you're afraid. Go ahead and be my guest. Just remember, if the ice breaks and you fall through, don't call on me to pull you out. As my brother eased out onto the ice, I heard a light cracking sound. I crossed my fingers. Nothing happened. The ice seemed thick enough to skate on. Buddy Earl motioned for me to join him. Come on out. This ice could hold up an elephant. As I stepped out onto the ice, there was another cracking sound. Urged on by my brother, I moved farther out on the pond. Suddenly, I slipped on the ice and fell. Hold on, Buddy shouted. Don't come over here, I yelled. The ice won't hold both of us. Too late. My brother came close and the ice fell apart like an old rag doll. Both of us went into the icy water. We were wet and cold, and if we couldn't remove the wood, our boots were ruined. The ice was broken enough to make it easy to reach the edge of the pond. Then we had to remove the wood from our boots, go to the house, and dry out. The more I used the hammer and pliers, twisting the nails, the more damage I did to the boots. Soon the edges of the boots were torn to shreds. Buddy Earl held up one of his boots. "Well, you sure made a mess of this. What are we going to do now?" It didn't take me long to answer. "The next circus coming through Knoxville will have me going with it." "Ah, that's never going to happen. Now, what's your second plan?" "Just confess everything to Dad and beg forgiveness." Buddy Earl looked at his boot again. "How long is it before another circus comes through?" Needless to say, our father was not impressed with our ingenuity. "I don't know what I'm going to do with you two. I just don't know what to say." Buddy Earl quickly threw gasoline on the fire. "Does the word forgiveness come to mind?" Although our father had a few choice words to say, forgiveness was not one of them. In the end, everything worked out almost fine. We used nails to attach the soles back to our boots. When we walked the school halls, everyone thought we had heel taps on our boots. This was Skating on Thin Ice by Douglas Clark. And while we're talking about cold, there's a little side item here entitled Flashback Fun. The coldest recorded temperature in the contiguous United States, -69.7 degrees, occurred on January 20, 1954, at Rogers Pass, Montana, 5,610 feet above sea level. The coldest temperature ever recorded in Alaska, -79.8 degrees, happened on January 23, 1971, at Prospect Creek, 180 miles north of Fairbanks. And that's why I'm glad I live in Arizona. And thank you for joining me today as I read Winter Stories from the Good Old Days magazine. And you have been listening to Reminiscing on Sun Sounds of Arizona, Arizona's 24-hour reading station. This is your volunteer reader, Dr. Mary Ellen Stepanek, wishing you good afternoon and good memories.